San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money, Not Theirs. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future. Now, It's Your Money, Not Theirs on Talk Radio 760 KFMB.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer. Welcome to It's Your Money, Not Theirs on this hot Sunday night. 50,000 watts of power coming to you from Kearney Mesa Live. We reach not only San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a marathon runner. He's a CPA. He's a family office advisor and a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. It's my pleasure to introduce Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you on this hot Sunday night?
Joe, I am doing great. We're going to touch on almost everything you said here in the next 10 minutes.
That's for sure.
But we got to go in order.
Let's go
in
order.
It's been a busy week, people.
It has. Let's start with last Tuesday. We had an encore.
Okay, what happened last Tuesday?
Well, we had an encore with State Assemblyman Nathan Fletcher brought his staff at my suggestion, since they did such a nice job fundraising for the Colorado shooting victims. I said, why not just have a fun night out with you, your staff, friends, family, whatever. So Tuesday, we went out to go see the campaign at Ultra Star Hazard Center, Mission Valley. And Richard, you were there too with your family. And what do you have to say about that crazy movie?
It's funny stuff, but we can't repeat very much of what Will Ferrell said on the screen. So
highly recommended, though. It's and if you go Tuesday or Thursday at Ultra Star, it's $6. So check it out any time of day. Doesn't matter. It's not a matinee. It's
fun stuff. And Congressman Filner was there as well.
Absolutely.
Our next mayor.
Absolutely. Well, we'll see. We'll see. And then the big launch of your little diatribe on YouTube, which is doing phenomenally well in terms
of... Yes, I made some comments on this report that the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants did called CPA Horizons 2025. We may talk about that a little bit tonight with our CPA guests, but more on that later.
Yes.
And so we put out a press release with a 7-minute version of my 55-minute presentation, and within a few days we had 2,864 media inclusions. I was on CBS News, in the San Francisco Chronicle, and 2,862 other sources, and I'm approaching 6,000 hits on YouTube as we speak.
Right.
Just Google, everybody out just out there, just Google accounting thought leader. Yes, I know that's an oxymoron, but just Google accounting thought leader, and I come up right there in front, and check this thing out. It's really, really interesting. We're talking about our CPAs really qualified to call themselves the most trusted advisor.
And we'll let's say some of that.
We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah. So, but so anyway, again, and even if they Google your name or go to iymoney.com, they Google your name on
YouTube. Or they can go to YouTube, Google my name.
And it's on our website, iymoney.com.
So that takes care of Tuesday.
Now, Wednesday, you had a star luncheon, your monthly star luncheon.
Yeah, Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. And we had a great filmmaker, Katia Louise, as well as the equine attorney, Bing Bush, on talking about their great film called Saving America's Horses, A Nation Betrayed. And I thought it was a great topic to have on because the Del Mar racetrack is going on.
Right.
And I've got a corral at my house that's being leased to horses. Right. So I don't have to pay for the horses.
And there is a slaughter issue going on in this country that not many people know about.
Right.
And there's problems on the racetracks as well in terms of injuries and horses going down.
Exactly. So we just wanted to get the word out that these beautiful animals that we like to go watch at the Del Mar racetrack and so on, they're very noble creatures that deserve to be treated with great respect when their days as racehorses are over. Further, they overbreed because it takes 100 horses to come up with the one winner.
Right.
And it's just not right that the other 99 should go on to anything other than a very nice life as somebody's pet or horse, or what have you.
But we'll spend more time on that, and we'll get into the issue of jockey injuries and worse in the weeks to come. So, but then Thursday was the book, Richard.
I co-authored a book with Greg Reed, R-E-I-D, called The Rise. It's a book. It's under the self-help category, but it's a book about self-discovery and never giving up. Where I counsel a fictional character, basically using my experiences when I could not see, when I lost my eyesight, about never giving up. And so we went out on Thursday, and right now on Amazon, I guess we're number 5 under the self-help category. I was informed that I am a Deepak Chopra sandwich. That is to say, Deepak is number 4 and number 6.
And you're right in between.
And so it's Greg S. Reed, R-E-I-D. The book is called The Rise, R-I-S-E. And if you just Google Amazon, it will come up really quickly, again, under the category of self-help. So if everybody could self-help me and buy some books, I would really appreciate that.
It's also spirituality and New Age and all that. And that
yeah, I don't consider it New Age because I'm so old, but yeah. I appreciate the reference. So that was Thursday, and by last night, we were up to number 8, and I guess by tonight, we're up to number 5.
Well, let's bring it on to Sunday. You woke up this morning and did the incredible...
I did the AFC half marathon.
Right.
It brought back memories of the Boston Marathon because of the ridiculous heat. I didn't run nearly as well as last year, but I took it easy, but I'm glad I took it easy. Last year, I came in 970th out of 8,000 whatever finishers, but this year, a voice inside my head said, Richard, it's brutally hot. It was like 72 degrees at the start at 7 in the morning, and the sun was up with no clouds. And so I just sort of jogged it and had fun and took it easy because I didn't want to toast myself because my brain kept saying, don't take a chance. And boy, was I ever glad I did that, because when I got done with the race and checked my email, I got a request from New Black Films to come on over to where they're shooting in Encinitas to be interviewed for a film about Billie Jean King that's going to be coming out hopefully early next year.
This is at the Bobby Riggs Tennis Club, and as everyone knows, as a young lad of 14 or 15, you were charged with keeping his scrapbook.
Yes, I was Bobby Riggs' scrapbook maker in 1973.
And historic year.
So Bobby passed away in 95, but his tennis club is now run by his good friend Lorne Kuehl. And so that's where the film company was shooting.
And who else did we meet today, Richard?
We met Pancho Segura.
Who, they say, was a better tennis player than Bobby Riggs and was beating a lot of these top women even in his 60s. So maybe it's good it was Bobby with his motor mouth as opposed to Pancho.
Exactly. So anyway, I got to recount my experiences as Bobby Riggs' scrapbook maker in 1973 when, of course, we had what I think is the most forgotten, important sports event in the history of this country, when Bobby Riggs beat Margaret Court on Mother's Day of 1973, because that led to
Houston.
What most people know about, which is the Battle of the Sexes
in
Houston. Obviously, if there was a different result on Mother's Day of 73, there never would have been a Battle of the Sexes September 20th of 73. And further, Margaret Court, had she won, was not the person who would have been in position to carry the banner of women's liberation, unlike Billie Jean King. And so I got to witness all of this and make scrapbooks for all of that year until Billie Jean put both Bobby and me out of business.
well, let's tell people, if you want, look, Billie Jean had never been there up until 2 weeks ago, which is pretty incredible. But if you want to go to that museum.
Oh, incredible tennis museum.
And it's actually a tennis club, so you could play tennis there and then go check out. There's a lot of artifacts and things from that whole era, which are totally astounding. They have his Wimbledon cup, his U.S. Open cup. They have the sugar daddy jacket he wore in Houston, which I thought was kind
of
cool.
Absolutely. Everybody, it's off of Highway 5, just east of the 5 on Santa Fe, not Lomas Santa Fe, but Santa Fe up in Encinitas.
Yeah, check it out. It's right near San Diego High School.
Right across the street from the old San Diego High School.
So you can get up there. Larnie's there every day.
So anyway, this week I was a hit on YouTube. I was a hit in the bookstores, and hopefully will be a hit in the movie theater.
Well, we'll see.
And from here on out, don't anybody bother me. Just contact my agent.
Hey, 10% of zero is still zero, right?
Exactly. I understand that. Yeah, who bought dinner for the film crew Friday night? That was me. So I'm at a negative now.
Thanks for that slice of pizza.
But Zara and James, it was really nice seeing you guys. You are a joy to be around.
They are. They are terrific. And
anyway,
you know what? Here's the plan. They're supposed to have the rough cut of this film done, I guess, in late September. As most of you know, Sundance is a huge annual film festival, happens in end of January, and then hopefully it'll be out in the theaters sometime between April, May, or June, and maybe as late as September of next year. Obviously, September of next year is the 40th anniversary, so remains to be seen. But an exciting week, Richard, and kudos to you and all your accomplishments.
And thanks for all your help, because you've contributed, obviously, not with my book, but with regard to everything else.
Yeah. Well, we know that.
Although you were nowhere to be found this morning when I had to run a mile and a half up that finishing hill.
Hey,
so
I ran the half marathon in 1984, thank you very much. That was the last half marathon I ever ran.
This was the 35th year, so that would have been seventh year. That would have been the seventh year, Joe.
I had my shirt with the J. David on the sleeve.
J. David Dominatelli. There we go.
The
hill wasn't as steep back then, Joe. Trust me.
But anyway, look, let's get on to tonight's guests. Why don't you introduce them? We've got a really great... We got all CPAs in the house tonight other than myself. So take it away, Richard, and introduce our wonderful guests. Actually, it's an encore presentation.
It is. Our CPA sponsor, Polito Epic Associates up in Vista, Paul Polito, CPA, and Don Epic, CPA. Welcome, you guys. Go ahead and follow that.
Not to mention Jim Lampley last week, but anyway, how you guys doing?
Great.
Doing good, thanks.
And so this is Don speaking, and then you have to introduce yourself a little so people know who's speaking. So
Everybody, introduce yourself ever so briefly so listeners can tell your voices apart.
Yeah, Don Epic. I've been with the firm for 17 years now, and I love giving great service to my clients.
And Don, who hired you?
The superstar tonight, Richard Museo.
And what year, what decade was that anyway?
That was the last millennium.
we have short memories, though, don't we? And then Paul Polito, how are you tonight?
I'm great. Started the firm back in 1981 when I moved down from L.A., and the firm has grown now over all these years. It'll be 31 years this month that we're in business.
How big is your firm, by the way? How many accountants and staff do you guys have?
We have 10 full-time, and during additional 6 people, seasonal staff.
Nice. So good personalized service, obviously, right?
That's right.
They're a great firm. Yeah. Up in Vista. Best audit and review firm in San Diego.
How'd you meet these gentlemen, Richard? How did that all work out?
Well, let's see. In 1989, and this actually has a funny story associated with Bobby Riggs, I merged my CPA practice into the firm. I know my first day was supposed to be the first day after the Labor Day holiday in September of 1989. However, Bobby Riggs's brother David, who was in an assisted living home in Coronado, died the Sunday before the Tuesday that I was supposed to start there. And so I had to take that first week off because Bobby's other brother, John, my Uncle John Riggs, was getting up in age and so really couldn't handle the funeral arrangements and so on. So I actually missed my first week of work with Bob Carter, because David Riggs, one of Bobby Riggs' older brothers, passed away 2 days, the day before the holiday. And so, you know, I called in. I'm like, oh, I can't come to work for the first week. Like, great start. But, so I joined Bob Carter, and then Paul, I guess about a year later, you merged.
Actually the same year.
A couple months later, by the end of the year. That's right. By December of 89, you merged your practice in as well. And all of a sudden, we went from being a pretty small firm to being a real big hitter up in North County.
Right.
Fun stuff, and it's been fun ever since.
Well, that's, you know, that
and then Don.
I joined the firm September of 95.
Right. Don came about 5 years later.
Wow. So you guys have been established. You've been here quite a while.
And really blessed with very long-term employees.
Yeah, that's great. That tells a lot about a firm when you have low turnover and people love to work with you. So that means a lot. It means a lot. I see here it says what on your website, which is Polito Epic with like polite with an O and epic with 2 P's and a C-H. So if, you have to, we don't make it easy. You have to think.
You major in English, Joe?
I was going to make a kind of a little commercial jingle about, you know, polite service and epics or, you know, an epic.
Oh, I like that.
But anyway, we'll come up with something at the
We're
break.
We're going to have to hire this guy. <don't we? laughs>
But hey, we have a break coming up. How about that? Hey, thanks a lot, Kevin. We're going to come back right back with more of It's Your Money Not Theirs after this break. Stay tuned. We're back with more of It's Your Money Not Theirs with Ephraim Zimbalist. Remember that, Richard?
FBI. I used to watch that on occasion.
Anyway, we're back with Don Polito and Paul. Paul Polito, Don Epic. Hey, it's been hot. My brain's fried today, Richard.
You know where we were shooting that film, Joe? It had to be nice. I lost more weight shooting that in that 90-degree They had a box than I did running that race.
Check this out, Don and Paul. They had to turn off the air conditioning in this room to shoot this movie, so everyone's like in a sauna bath or steam bath in there. I mean, it was incredible. People don't realize Hollywood isn't all that glamorous sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to say. I thought it was going to just be so glamorous, Joe. Anyway, let's get serious. So Don Epic and Paul Polito, you guys do a lot of tax planning. You know, I'll be frank, preparing income tax returns doesn't represent very much value to a client because all the shooting's done, the history is in the books, and you just do the best you can to do great work. But the value is in doing the planning before the year ends, and you serve a lot of small and medium-sized, very successful, closely held businesses where you not only have to maybe plan for the corporation or the entity, but also the people, the individuals who own it. And we're sitting at this point in our nation's history where the income tax code that we have is good for roughly another 129 days. And then we don't even know what we have. So what on earth are you guys doing to work with your clients between now and year end to make sense of what they can do to save income taxes, and beyond that, have a coherent plan going forward.
One thing's fairly certain. Rates are not going down. And in many of our clients' cases, they're beginning to make a comeback from the recession. They've made a lot of cuts and made a lot of reinventing of themselves and gotten their businesses more profitable. So the future looks better. So one of the strategies is to accelerate transactions into this year.
So it's counterintuitive.
Really, it is.
Yeah, because usually we defer income and accelerate deductions.
We may be seeing today the lowest tax rates of my lifetime.
I would agree. I mean, can you give us some examples about, well, what's going to happen, for example, with capital gains rates if nothing happens in Congress?
Well, if nothing happens, it'll go to 20% next
from the present 15.
Right.
And dividends go to the maximum of 39.6%.
From the present 15, if it's qualified.
Correct.
And then further, in 2013, we have coming on board the 3.8%, I guess you could call it surtax?
Yes.
Because of the Obamacare bill for income earners of $250,000 above married and $200,000 single, if memory serves,
mm-hmm.
which means we could have a federal marginal tax rate of 43.4%, right? If I did
That's
the math
right.
Yeah.
Right. And then we have three bills in on the ballot in California that could theoretically raise the California rates even more than they already are.
So what do you think Congress is going to do? Do you think they'll do anything to extend the Bush tax cuts for at least a little while until we know who gets elected and what tax policy might become? Or, I mean, what's your opinion?
This is kind of a funny comment. George Bush has said if they called them anything but the Bush tax cuts, they'd probably pass.
Right. Right. I read that. It's a great line. Said he didn't have a sense of humor?
Shazam.
But yeah, I think there's going to be some type of extension of some of the Bush tax cuts.
As Obama said, he said both sides agree on part of this, that being the middle class. So let's at least pass what we agree on. So there's some hope that there'll be some relief.
But by relief, we mean that they may extend the Bush tax cut, say, for 1 year, say, through 2013, so that taxpayers don't have to scramble around madly not knowing what the rules are next year. But you still get back to your original premise, right, Paul, that we have the lowest tax rates we're ever going to see, even if the changes happen a year later, right?
Probably.
Okay.
And you kind of touched on it, Richard. One of the biggest problems for our economy, especially for small companies, is the uncertainty. It's not knowing what the rules are going to be. It's not knowing what the state rates are going to be. It's not knowing what employment taxes are going to be. All of this unknown stifles investment.
Right. I mean, for example, let's assume I want to hire somebody, and it costs me $50,000 a year to hire them, which is really $70,000 a year with the payroll taxes and workers' comp. But what if my income tax rates go up significantly? Can I afford my employee? You're right. I mean, it's how do you make a decision?
It's hard.
Yeah, what Congress really needs to do is come with an 8-year, 10-year plan that people can strategize around for a number of years as opposed to this 1-year Band-Aid approach.
Right, and then we had other things that got cut. I mean, for example, one of my all-time favorites, the research and development credit. Sunsetted at the end of 11, right?
Right.
Right.
Should government be looking more toward corporations to pay a little bit more? I mean, you hear about some of the Fortune 500 paying nothing. Now, I don't know if that's a fair statement or not, but do you have any opinion on that? Anybody?
I don't know that the problem, Joe, is that corporations don't necessarily pay enough, in my opinion. I think that corporations get a bad name because of the multinational aspect of many of the publicly traded companies, the ability to shift income or net income.
Mm-hmm.
To functions that are performed outside of the U.S. It's more of a policy matter, I think, because it goes hand in hand with, and President Obama's budget proposal has included prohibitions against what's called outsourcing. So, for example, payments made to foreign providers might not be deductible. That's in the small print, I think, of President Obama's budget proposal. So I think the issue goes beyond just are the corporations paying their fair share. The question is the tax code set up to promote extremely large companies that can hire very experienced and expensive planners to shall we say, remove tax burdens, even though the profits haven't been removed. And that's a philosophical discussion more than it is.
Yeah, the CEOs of these five Fortune 500 companies will tell you they're trying to do the best to return the investment to their shareholders. And if they are playing on even ground with these other multinational companies, you know, that's what they want.
Right, because the stockholders are investing in the companies because they expect a certain return. And if the company has a huge income tax expense that otherwise could be avoided through good planning, what is the CEO or CFO supposed to do? Pay more income tax on purpose to be patriotic or serve the best interest of their shareholders? And the answer is they're supposed to serve the best interest of their shareholders.
Well, true, but I mean, you see some of these oil companies paying zero and even getting subsidies. You know, it's interesting, but... Hey, well, we've got to take a little break right there with that, right, Kevin? So we'll come right back after the new sports, weather, and announcements. So stay tuned. Thank you. More of It's Your Money, Not Theirs. Hey, if you want to catch all of our podcasts, we take out the commercials on our website. Go to iymoney.com. You can hear tonight's show and all the other great shows that we've had. And now over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
We're not going to take out this commercial. We want to thank our major sponsor, UBS, Mr. Michael Quaranta and Drew Freitas. Thank you very much. Also, next week's guest, Rich Gaines with Family Legacy Legal. Our present guest, of course, Polito Epic CPAs. Regents Bank, Sean Puckett et al. Thanks so much. 2 weeks ago's guest, Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited. And our great guest from last week, Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, who had the very difficult job of following Jim Lampley,
right,
our call-in guest. Great job, Jason. And we have a new sponsor starting, I'll announce them now, but they're starting technically in September, Joel Grushkin, CPA, and Cost Segregation Initiatives. Cost segregation is a great way for real estate owners to reduce their income taxes and improve their cash flow. More about them later. So everybody, UBS on down the list, thanks so much. So Paul and Don, when we went to break, we were talking about income tax policy. And what, for example, public companies are trying to accomplish. But let's talk about the clients you serve, small and medium-sized businesses. They're not necessarily as concerned with returning shareholder value because usually they're owned by one person or a husband and a wife or two or three partners. What are they concerned about?
Complexity, regulation, uncertainty. Those are the three things that hold them back. And I think that what we're seeing, Richard, is... A real pullback right now. I think that's why we can't get employment started. Typically, it's been the smaller companies that have been the big employers in the U.S. And a lot of those companies went out of business during the slowdown, and a lot of them have come back much smaller. And many are just sitting on the sidelines holding on to cash, waiting to see what's going to happen. Nobody wants to take a big risk. And the problem is that a lot of our legislation is built around trying to avoid these major catastrophes that have happened with the large public companies, the large government entities. But those rules and regulations apply to the small companies as well. And it makes it so expensive to do business, it's becoming unprofitable.
Yeah, and then here in California, the fact that we have a high state income tax, which may get higher, I think that definitely has driven business out of this state, which, again, is not a national issue. It's a local issue. And there are states that are actively courting business owners because of, well, California and certain other states' reputations for not being business-friendly because of their income tax policies. And that's really sad when jobs leave a state because it's not good for the community.
And a lot of companies have been eaten up by larger ones, and we were talking about too big to fail a little bit at the break. Would you gents favor a little more competition and maybe breaking up some industries? Or I know it's a difficult issue, but you have any thoughts on that? Something to stimulate the economy that way, or is that not a good approach?
I don't know. I think really you have to let the market forces come to light as opposed to government intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So have you guys read the budget proposals or the tax proposals of both Romney and President Obama? I guess I'm going to ask the question in the context of something specific. If tax rates went up, what would that do to small and medium-sized business? I mean, what do you think would happen?
I think it would hold some investment back. No matter, when I was telling you over the break, when I went into business, the marginal tax rate, federal rate was 70%. Prime rate was 20.5. We haven't seen numbers like that in years. But I had a family to feed. I was young. I had a career to launch. I wasn't going to sit on the sidelines. And we have a lot of bright people that are going to do something. They're going to stimulate some kind of economic activity. But low rates have historically encouraged investment, and that's what's missing. When we had these high rates, we had things like the investment tax credit. We had a lot of tax shelters that were available then. So there are ways not to pay 70%. Now, there aren't many holes left, and the thought of just ratcheting up the rate is putting some people on the sidelines as far as business investment goes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for example, at the end of 2011, the 100% of additional first-year depreciation for what's called qualified property, that's like, you know, plant and equipment and so on, placed in service in 2000, that went away at the end of last year, as did one of my all-time favorites, the research and development credit. Well, due to expire at the end of this year is the extension of the 50% additional first-year depreciation for qualified property placed in service this year. So, I mean, how does a business make a decision about how much cost they're willing to incur to, for example, upgrade their equipment, which might improve productivity, right? But, I mean, it would improve productivity. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. But the point is, if there's no tax breaks for doing that, does that affect investor behavior? I think it does. What do you think?
Yeah, that's part of our strategy with our clients this year, is to let them know this is expiring this year. And you know, we have a lot of manufacturing clients that, you know, for instance, need large machinery. This is a great way to take advantage of it this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because it may get extended into next year. It may not. It may go on forever. It may not. And if tax rates go up at all, well, why not do it this year?
And this uncertainty is what's killing it, you know, mm-hmm. because irrespective of whether you get a 100% write-off or a 50% write-off or accelerated depreciation, whatever you get, if you knew what the rules were, you could do the math. When you're making a $500,000 investment, you got to do the math. It's important.
So how about your individual owners of these companies? Are you suggesting the same thing, taking in more income this year and on the theory that rates are going up, or is it a different approach with the individual owners as opposed to the company approach to tax planning?
No, it's the same. We're talking 35% versus 39.6%.
Yeah, huge increase.
Yeah, you want accelerating.
And do you guys think they'll ever be, out here in California, we tend to run into this thing called alternative minimum tax all of the time, because two tax deductions, real estate taxes and state income taxes, are deductible when calculating your regular tax, but they're considered preferential tax deductions when calculating your what's called alt-min tax. And, of course, taxpayers have to pay the greater of. Do you think there's ever going to be any softening of or, well, any, I guess you'd call that AMT, alternative minimum tax relief?
I think what Congress will continue to do is extend the indexed inflation amounts in order to counter that.
There's actually a two-year patch in one of the provisions.
Okay. Yeah, because I know whenever I see a tax return where the taxpayer is not an alternative minimum tax, I run around and show it to people. Hey, look, I found where they were. Because, out here, you know, with real estate taxes and California income taxes not being deductible, in effect, for people who are subject to alt-min tax. And it's like, wow, it's weird when you don't have somebody in it, as opposed to in the old days when you did have somebody into it. And I think it needs to be patched, because it's not understandable by people anymore how it works. But that's another story. So if tax rates go up, and let me ask the question backwards. If people are heavily invested in common stocks that pay dividends and tax rates on qualified dividends go up, do you have any concerns about the market doing something really, really strange in terms of a massive sell-off or anything like that? In other words, are you guys giving clients any advice about what their asset allocation might be, beyond just the income tax planning, what their asset allocations might look like given what tax rates might become?
Well, dividend-paying stocks are going to lose their luster. You know, with that 15% rate, that was a huge benefit. If indeed, we go to 39.5% for most of our clients, which most of them will be in that rate, then the dividend model, which many subscribe to for their investments, especially after the big adjustment that the market did in 2007-2008, is not going to be the silver bullet anymore. And so it's bound to change their asset allocation.
And how about the 3.8% Medicare tax with regard to people's passive income in general? You can't get yield anyway, I mean, in terms of, you know, investing in CDs and so on. But don't you think when you combine higher taxes with extremely low savings rates, you were mentioning the prime of 20%, I mean, isn't that a disincentive for somebody who's older and living on a fixed income? I mean, I shouldn't say disincentive. Doesn't it make them inclined to maybe look at things that are too risky for what they should be doing?
I hope that doesn't happen, but I would imagine that some.
Yeah, I would imagine that's where the investment advisors are going to look at alternative investments, hedge funds, other real estate opportunities, et cetera.
Yeah, and I agree, and I'm bringing that up because I'm setting you up for a question. That's where I think CPAs, when we say that the moniker most trusted advisor should apply to us, I think it's there that CPAs are going to earn it, because I think CPAs are going to have some very. I don't want to hear your thoughts on this. I think CPAs are going to have some very frank discussions with their clients where maybe what they're saying is different than what other complementary service providers are saying. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree.
And that could be tough because, you know, collaboration isn't about nodding your head and agreeing with everything everybody says. It's
Absolutely.
About coming up with the best answer for the person that you're serving, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So it's going to be very interesting to see because right now you know, liquidity is important, but there's no premium being paid to stay liquid. In fact, you're disincentivized to stay liquid, and that can cause people, I think, to make bad decisions, mm-hmm. depending on what their particular circumstances are. So, I've been in business as a CPA for almost 30 years. This is going to be, I think, the most important election with regard to future tax policy that we've ever seen.
Let's hold that thought right there, Rich. We'll be right back after a short break. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with our last segment of It's Your Money Not Theirs with Paul Polito, Don Epic. You can reach these gentlemen at their website is politoepic.com, politoepic.com. They're up in Vista. Great gentlemen. And we're back with you and Richard and Don and Paul.
Also, phone number 760-599-9900. So, gentlemen, let's talk about, I guess, the opposite side of income tax. Let's talk about reporting and financial statements. There's this big debate going on with regard to how the U.S. reports financial statements all the way from public companies down to, for example, companies that you do audits and reviews for, vis-a-vis certain countries' adoption of what's known as IFRS, which stands for International Financial Reporting Standards, International Financial Reporting Standards. And the genesis behind this is, given that we're now in a global economy where investors have the choice of investing not only domestically but all around the world, should we try to find a uniform system for reporting financial data that is transparent, that allows investors to compare and contrast accurately without regard to what country a business is located in, as opposed to, for example, different countries using different accounting standards, which might require adjustment. Can you guys give me some feedback on where you think this stands and where this might be going and why it's important?
Well, it might be helpful real quick to just tell the listeners what accounting principles are for, whether they're international or whether they're U.S. GAAP. It's basically the rules around which revenue and expense are recognized, assets are measured, that sort of thing. It's so that we're all operating under the same rules. And generally, from what I've seen in IFRS versus U.S. GAAP, it's a lot more general.
GAAP stands for generally accepted accounting principles.
Right. And I think U.S. GAAP might be a little more developed than IFRS. And I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But, for example, we have specific generally accepted accounting principles for specific industries. You don't see much of that in IFRS. It's more general, all-encompassing rules, so it's going to leave a little more room for interpretation, in my view.
And Don, what do you think? I mean, do you think the U.S. will ever get to adopting this or not?
I think it's going to be done over a period of time. What's going to happen is right now there are three priorities out there. There's a list of 14 different projects, and the first three are financial instruments, revenue recognition, and leases.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first group, if you will, that will be because of the divergence between U.S. versus international standards. And I think it is a good thing for international companies, for those investors of those international companies, so that when they're making decisions, there is an even playing field, if you will, of rules that are being adhered to.
Yeah, and of note, I noticed talking about the BRIC companies, India recently announced that they are not quite yet ready to adopt IFRS. They thought they were going to be, but they're not. Obviously a very rapidly developing company with a very complex economy.
Who's in charge of IFRS? Which countries have the most pull or power, or individuals or firms? Any guess on that?
I believe it originated. The strength of it originated behind Great Britain and some of its, I don't want to say allies, but companies that tend
European
to use it. The European Union countries.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Switzerland. I mean, we hear Basel all the time. Basel.
Yeah, and of course, with regard to adopting a somewhat uniform currency, although the UK didn't. So it originated out of Europe, no question.
Very collaborative.
Yeah, it has. I mean, that's a good thing. It has been very collaborative. You know, Mexico, for example, south of the border, they adopted IFRS. I don't know where Canada stands. I didn't look that up before the show, so I apologize. The whole point, though, is that financial data should be standard and transparent so that investors don't have to deal with an opaque or semi-opaque landscape like Gary Aguirre called it once upon our show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately the SEC is going to have to get involved with regard to what the SEC wants. But Paul, comment, because you talk about this a lot. What's good for the SEC means, well, what's good for publicly traded companies. Again, we tend to work with small and medium-sized businesses that aren't publicly traded, so could this, again, cause more complexity that bogs down small and medium-sized businesses?
Absolutely. While there are some exceptions for smaller companies and non-public companies, by and large, it's going to make their job more complicated.
What's good for you guys?
Yeah, the tax code's already up to, what, 72,000 pages, Richard, with regs and everything?
We're probably due for an overhaul of the tax code again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
been
28 years.
I need something on a high shelf. I don't use a ladder. I just stack up the tax code. But we got about a minute to go, you guys. If you could tell anything, if you could say one thing to a small or medium-sized successful business owner right now, given where we stand, what would it be? Sorry to put you on the spot, but I'm famous for that.
Yeah.
Hang in there?
Yeah, exactly.
Give him a call.
Yeah, call me. Yeah,
call us.
760-599-9900. Don, go ahead.
No, this is actually a great opportunity this year for strategies that you want to implement because of the what's on the horizon.
Paul?
I'd agree. There's a lot of opportunity. Things are going to happen. Change always causes things to happen, even if it's negative change. Stuff's going to happen, and it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, again, and my hope is that we actually get some tax policy where they say it's at least 5 years long, 8 years long, even 10. Boy, can I dream 10 years long? Because when somebody makes an investment decision, they don't just say, well, what's the return on investment this year? Yeah. You've got to pencil that out well into the future. Yeah, otherwise,
we've got to wrap it right there, though, Richard.
Hey, buy the book.
Buy the book. Thank you,
gentlemen.
Go on
YouTube and look at the video.
Paul Polito, Don Epic.
We'll tell you more about the movie, but see that, too.
They give you polite service and epic results. Put that on your website. Hey, you have a great week. Thank you to Kevin Terrell, our technical director. Thank you to Craig Blanker, con executive, and our programming genius, Dave Sniff. You have a great week. Stay cool. Stay hydrated. We'll see you next Sunday. Good night now.